Let us look at the scripture today. Meditate on the word as I read the scripture. Today's scripture is from Exodus 3, verses 7 to 12, 4, 1 to 5. The Lord said, "I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. And now the cry of the Israelites have reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now, go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt." But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" And God said, "I will be with you. And this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain." Moses answered, "What if they do not believe me or listen to me and say, 'The Lord did not appear to you'?" Then the Lord said to him, "What is that in your hand?" "A staff," he replied. Then the Lord said, "Throw it on the ground." Moses threw it on the ground, and it became a snake, and he ran from it. Then the Lord said to him, "Reach out your hand and take it by the tail." So Moses reached out and took hold of the snake, and it turned back into a staff in his hand. "This," the Lord said, "said the Lord, this is so they may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has appeared to you." This is the word of God.
Thanks be to God.
Let's welcome Reverend YC for the word today.
Good afternoon, church, and happy youth day to all of you. Many of you are youth, but even Terrence is still a youth. All right. The theme for this year is "What's in Your Hand?" And this story about an old man, actually, about Moses. And Moses, as some of you may know or may not know, I believe most of you have watched the movie Ten Commandments. Okay, the main character of that story, of that movie, is Moses. And Moses is a great man, greatly used by God. He's a very humble man, and he's a man that God used to deliver the Israelites out of the tyranny of the Egyptians. Now, today is a very special day. It's a Youth Sunday, so we will have two speakers today. I will speak the first half, and the next speaker will speak on the second half. So don't guess who's the next speaker, okay? You will not wear something like me. Okay, so just focus on, I'll just speak quickly for the first half, and second half, when I come back, and I'll just wrap up the whole sermon again. Now, let's look at the Moses' life. Okay, since we talk about Moses, and I'll just divide Moses' life very easily. Most of scholars will just divide into three phases of his life. The first 40 years is living in comfort and learning. He was a Jew, and at the time, Pharaoh has a decree that say that all the baby ought to be killed, especially the Israelite, the Jewish kids ought to be killed. And then somehow, miraculously, Moses' life was preserved. And in fact, he was being brought up by Pharaoh's daughter. That's why he lived in the palaces, and then he learned all the knowledge and all the wisdom of the Egyptians. Okay? So live in comfort and learning. But his heart was burdened with his suffering Israelites, because at the time the Israelites were being oppressed. So they were being forced, become a forced labor, forced slavery. And then they need to build all the palaces and all the buildings and all the construction for Pharaoh. And they're having a very, very hard life. And Moses knew well that, you know, he was actually one of them. He's so lucky that he was in a palace, so he don't have to work so hard like the other. So, but that is something that in him, and that's why that he think that, no, I want to save them. So he tried his own way, and then he went out, and then something happened, and as a result, he killed someone that he needed to escape for his life. Now we can say that Moses, when he's young, he has vision. He has this burden. He wants to do something for the Lord. He wants to deliver his people, his nation. So he went up alone and do it his way. I do it my way, another song. I did it my way. And often, this is also one of the characteristics that some of us, we may be able to identify with. When you receive something from the Lord and something that's been moved in your heart, and you think that you are the one that will make it happen and you don't need anyone else and you can single-handedly accomplish that. And that is pride that comes with even the calling of God. As a pastor, I can tell you that we have to be very careful for whoever that serves. The calling is of grace. It's always out of grace so that it humbles us. But it's not just about the movement of the heart, but it's also about the readiness of the heart. And we know that Moses is not ready the first 40 years. So he did not accomplish what he set up to do. And then came the second 40 years of his life, the next season. He led a dejected and a forgotten life. He just went out because people are running after him, want to kill him, so he ran away. He ran to a Midianite, stay with the Midianites, and then he married one of priest's daughter and begin to have his family and his own sheep, his own goats and his own cattle and happily live his life. But during that period of time, God is actually preparing him. So from very confident, very knowledgeable person to just a shepherd living in the outback of the country. And you look at it, it's a big change and it takes him 40 years. They say that God takes 40 years to take Egypt out of Moses' life, and this is the 40 years. And then when he was at the age of 80, God appeared to him again and says that now these 40 years is a 40 years of surrendering to God his life and of service to God. And he had a fruitful and a fulfilled life that impacted millions. Yeah. He delivered the Israelites out of Egypt's slavery and performed many miracles. The opening of the Red Sea, the parting of the Red Sea, the 10 plagues on Egypt's soil, and then all the miracles that happened during when they were wandering in the wilderness, the manna, the quails, all these things, the heat and the water gush out from the rock. All this performed by who? By Moses, through Moses. And he gave them the 10 commandments and the laws. And God was made known throughout the region because of the miracle that performed. God performed through Moses, and then every nation at the time know how come the greatest empire at the time, Egypt, cannot even contain a small group of people. They're slaves, and the slaves went on, went on protest, and then they're able to get out of the powerful pharaohs. It's impossible. How can that happen? If you to follow the story, everybody know that because the Jewish God saved them, Jehovah saved them, the Red Sea was parted and they were being delivered, and even Pharaoh's armies were being drowned in the Red Sea. So all the people around that region was very fearful, and God's name was made known. Do you wish a life like this, that God's name will be made known through you, through the things that you do, through the life that you lead? That you will truly be a good witness for God. I believe in us that some of this, we want to be great. Everybody want to be great. Nobody want to be nobody, right? Everybody want to be great. But what is greatness? We shall see later on. So, I just summarize that into 3 points so that it's easy for us to remember. The first is, for every calling that we have, you must be this seeing. God sees. The people is suffering. God hear their groaning and their crying out. God know what they are going through. And God's heart was moved. And God sent his messenger, or his deliverer, in this case Moses, so they can deliver them, the Israelites, out of the Egyptian hand. Now today, what do you see? In this world, there are many things that you could see. But do you see the needs around? Do you see there are gaps? Whether you see it in the church context, in your family, in the wider society, in the world, what do you see? And when you see that there is this gap and this need, what do you do about it? Are you moved by the thing that burdens you? What are the things that really burdens you? We can give thanks for people. Oh, we thank for Janice, who singly helmed the student ministry.
God.
Pastor, our worship leader as well. We thank you for our DGL. We thank you for some of the leaders here, for singer, for all these people that who work very hard for it. We thank them. We clap hand for them, right? But are we moved also to say that, yeah, they can do it. I also can do it by God's grace. And how can I come together with them as a team and make it even better? Do you have that? Does it move you? Or what are the needs? Or do you see there's a gap in the church, in the organization? There's a gap in the places that you work, in a family, in relationship, that you think that you can be the peacemaker. You can be the one that will make it happen. Because no one sees it, and you're burdened for it. So the calling comes from seeing. So I always pray, open our eyes that we may see. Without seeing, you cannot believe. Of course, we say that faith is not about seeing. Yes, faith is not about seeing. But the needs you need to see. Why we go thousands of miles away to Japan? We hear a lot about Japanese mission. We need to go there and see. Why do you go to Ubon? You hear a lot about, from Pastor Joshua, from all the people. Why you need to go to Ubon? You go there to see. Because when you see, it's very different. So I pray that you will see. God, open your eyes to see. First, second thing is that there's transformation. So after 40 years, Moses, already at the age of 80, he has no more the passion, or we call it something that in him died. Probably his vision for his people died, you know, and he just become a very self-doubting person, living in rejection. All that he have is just a staff, and he just man his own household and his own sheep and his own goats. But when God came to him, God asked, what do you have? What's that in your hand? I have nothing. Who am I, though, God? Who am I? Who am I to go to Pharaoh? Who am I? I can't even speak well. I'm startled. Raise someone else. This is how Moses has become the prince of Egypt, become a shepherd, and he lose all his confidence in himself. He throw everything, his knowledge, his wisdom, all out. And when God approached him and said, what do you have in your hand? A staff. What's about a staff? There's nothing. I have this all the while in my life. I don't think it's anything great, anything special, anything worthwhile. If I lose a staff, just get another one. Something that in him that he probably don't value much. But God said, throw it on the floor. Throw it on the ground, and what happened? It turned into a snake. He got shocked, and he fled. He said, is Moses afraid of snake? A man living out in the wilderness who are not afraid of snakes, probably killed many snakes. I think what really shocked him is that God can use something all the while with him, super ordinary. He think that it's not even worth anything and can turn it into something that he cannot even imagine. Snake? A wooden staff become a living snake? How can that possible? I think that really shocked him. He run away. He know that something going coming. But this is what he had. But God said that when you're able to turn that to God, God is going to give you what you will have. And with the staff, he performed many miracles, even at the parting of the Red Sea. And the transformation take place. And then it's not easy to lead a million of people out. But he persevered. Keep going. He doesn't quit. There are times that he tell God, I take my life away. It's too hard. But at the end, he didn't quit. And he brought blessing to others. Is there in your life that you see things like this? You have been serving, you have been seeking God, and then what God is going to do in my life? Right? So, this is the first part. So, the second part, I want to introduce the next speaker. Shall we put our hand together? Come, let's clap and welcome Scott Harrison. You don't know who is he, but you will soon know who is he. Okay, let's welcome Scott. Yay.
My name is Scott Harrison. I lead an organization.
Can we just start off? My name is Scott.
Our mission is to bring clean water to everyone on the planet. I grew up in suburbia.
Okay, now my turn.
And this was my house. My dad was a businessman, and my mom was a writer. They loved each other, and they loved me. We were a happy family. Until we weren't. When I was 4 years old, my mom collapsed on the bedroom floor. We just moved into a new house, and our house had a carbon monoxide gas leak, but none of us knew it until then. She didn't die that day, but her immune system did. She became allergic to everything. Perfume, the ink from books, radio waves. wore strange masks all the time and was often connected to oxygen. The toxic gas destroyed her immune system and, in a way, my childhood too. After the poisoning, our roles reversed, and I began to take care of her. As the only child, I had to be a good one. I learned to cook, do laundry, and take care of the house. I was a good Christian kid who played piano in church and wanted to be a doctor when I grew up to help sick people like her. Until I turned 18. Music was my escape, so I joined a band and moved to New York.
Right about the time when the band broke up, I got involved in producing these like live music shows in the city. I realized that you could actually get paid in New York City to drink alcohol for free. This job was called a nightclub promoter. So you just had to get beautiful people in the clubs, and if you got the right people in the clubs, you could charge guys $500 to buy a bottle of champagne that cost you $40.
I moved from club to club to club, filling up the VIP section and flashing my Rolex to the club photographers. For almost 10 years after that, I smoked 2 packs of cigarettes a day and was out drunk almost every night. I was into strip clubs, gambling, and just about every drug except heroin.
On New Year's Eve, we all went to Punta Lesta, it's a kind of party town in Uruguay.
We rented this incredible house with cooks, waiters, and magnums of expensive champagne.
Although glamorous on the outside, there was a long decline in happiness. I remember just feeling so unhealthy about it all.
The next day, the party was still going, but I wanted the music to stop. Try serving others instead of myself.
I'm filling out these long applications for these very credible humanitarian organizations that have long histories. I put in the applications and then I wait. And I guess I should not have been surprised, but I have denied by all of these organizations. They won't even let me volunteer because of my past.
So they're like, what do you do again? We're serious people. Thankfully, one organization says, if you pay us $500 a month, you can volunteer with us. So I said, here are my credit card details. Where are you guys going?
They were an amazing team of doctors and surgeons who traveled the world on a hospital ship. They specialized in removing facial tumors, and they were going to Liberia, one of the poorest countries in the world, and a country I'd never even heard of.
I say, I'm going to sign up and be your volunteer photojournalist. I'm always taking pretty good pictures and photos and love telling stories. Everything in my life changed. I decided in one fell swoop to kind of never smoke again and never touch drugs again, you know, to never gamble again, to, you know, to swear off pornography and strip clubs and just, I needed to walk so far in the other direction. I walked up this gangway and this became my new home.
Nothing could have prepared me for what I was about to see.
My name is Scott. I think we may be able to help you.
I met a man named Harris. He was suffocating to death with a benign tumor. I got to see Harris's transformation because of an amazing surgeon named Dr. Gary Parker.
So we've got to get your blood nice and strong for our operation, huh?
Dr. Gary had moved his entire family on the ship to volunteer for a short time. That was 29 years ago. He just never left. I'd never met anyone with that kind of dedication before.
Very happy we can schedule a meal today for Christmas. First good Christmas in 13 years.
A couple weeks later,
surgeries. But I started spending more and more time out in the rural villages. And as I would travel around these villages, I would see the most shocking things.
475 people living here. This is what they're drinking. You can see there's bugs crawling around in it.
I'm sort of putting this together, saying, look, thousands of people are turning up sick, and the most basic need for health isn't even met. It wasn't okay. Kids shouldn't be drinking from scummy swamps or ponds or rivers. There were so many diseases caused by bad water. Cholera, dysentery, trachoma, bilharzia, things I'd never even heard of. Dirty water is responsible for more death in the world than all forms of violence, including war. Even if it were a million people, this would be a crisis. But it's not 1 million. It's 785 million people who live on our planet right now without access to clean water. That's twice the population of the United States. Nearly 1 in 10 people worldwide. Behind those statistics were real lives. People who were dying because they couldn't get clean water. And many of them were children. I began to become really interested in the water issue. Who was doing something about this? How come more people weren't talking about water? I came back to New York City ready to go. So I started with a party. It's the only thing I knew how to do. I was a gun controller. So I got someone to donate a club. I threw my 31st birthday party. I got 700 people to come out. I lured them with open bar. Then I charged them $20 at the door. This time, instead of pocketing $15,000, we took it immediately to a refugee camp in northern Uganda. We built 3 wells. We fixed 3 wells. And then we sent the photos and the GPS and the story back to those 700 people. This was a big deal. People could not believe that a charity would bother to report to them on a $20 gift and that something actually happened with the money that they could see, that they could connect with. 700 people proved that we could make a difference, even $20 at a time. This was the beginning of charity water. As I'm talking about setting up a charity, I realize that so many of my friends don't trust charities. In fact, I learned that 42% of people in America alone don't trust charities. From the beginning, I was determined to do things differently, and I had a few big ideas. First, we'd handle money differently. From day one, Charity Water made a bold promise that 100% of all donations would go directly to clean water. I opened up a separate bank account for overhead, and we never touched the water money to pay for things like staff salaries, office rent, or travel expenses. We started looking for generous people with the resources to cover those overhead costs. Second, we improved each water project we funded. We put photos and GPS coordinates on Google Maps and even attached GPS trackers to drilling rigs so people could follow it. Later, we created and installed thousands of remote water sensors so we know that the project continued to work over time and even how much clean water was flowing. Third, we believe for the work to be sustainable, it had to be led by locals.
Water and sanitation program creates an enabling environment so that all aspects of development can take off.
We built outdoor exhibitions, staged water walks, and designed ads that made people think differently about water. We got space on buses and taxis donated, spreading the word to everyone we could. We took over the windows of luxury retailers and created a TV commercial that ran for free to more than 20 million people. People started to take notice, and thousands She was disappointed when she didn't reach her goal, but she raised $220, and her mom assured her it was good enough. She could try again next year. She never got that chance. A few weeks later, Rachel lost her life in a car accident.
Well, just at 9 years old, Rachel Beckwith already had a legacy. Hers was charity water.
NBC's Lee Cowan explains how even now, Rachel Beckwith continues to make a difference.
Hundreds of strangers started to give $9 in her honor. Then it became thousands. Within weeks, Rachel's fundraising campaign had raised over $1.2 million for clean water. The heart of this 9-year-old girl inspired 32,000 people to give.
Thank you, Scott, for his life story. And truly, if you want to know more about this, you can go to Amazon and buy this book called The Thirst, or you can just Google, first I'll thank Priscilla for kind of editing the video down to about 12 minutes, so you're watching is much longer than that. There's many clips on YouTube that you can watch. Now, Harrison, he knew God. He was a Christian kid. He played piano in the church. He left God because the world outside is more attractive. And then he returned to God, a broken man again. And from there on, God birthed in him a vision, charity water. By him stepping up, just going to this Liberia, this place, and he saw that, why is it that people have to live in such a very subnormal kind of living condition? And then his past did not determine his future. I want to tell all our brothers and sisters here, your past doesn't determine your future. The important thing is that his response to God set a new course in life. We can start afresh in God. We can always start afresh in God. And a broken vessel become an instrument of blessing to millions of people, as we watched the video before. Say, what's in your hand? I'm a nightclub promoter. What can I do? I guess most of us are more than nightclub promoter here. You have skills. You have learning. You have knowledge. You have connection. You have relationship. You have certain traits. You have certain personality that God can use. God did not give Moses another staff, another super duper thing, or a genie lamp so that he can rub a few times and miracle happen. He used exactly what he had for many, many years, the 40 years that he lived in a Midianite place. You have many things in your life that we do not take notice of. Maybe very ordinary, you think, but in the eyes of God, you surrender it to God. God can turn it into a miracle, just like a broken life of Scott Harrison. What's in your hand? God can turn it into a miracle. And God is waiting. God is waiting for Harrison, for Scott to come to the end of his rope so they can return. Because God remembered him. He said he's a good boy, right? You saw his story. He helped up the mother, helped around the house, even very actively serving in the church. Come 18, totally a different person. But God never forget him. You may leave God sometime. You may fall, but God never leaves you. God never, never leaves us. So we can always come back to him. The question is that, are you willing? He quits, he sold everything he had, he take a year break, and he just anywhere go. And God, in his own scheme, sent him to this place. And you see the sound of Dr. Gary Parker? He just go there for a volunteer. He's a surgeon. And he never left. 29 years on mercy ship. What can you do? What do we have? Well, very simple thing. I just quote this example because it's very recent. Not because it's very grand, but it's just because it's very recent. We start caring for the people in Block 19 and Block 3. In fact, Block 19, we are reluctantly caring for them because we think that they are more problematic residents compared to Block 3A, 3B, 3C, 3D. So we do not want to go there. But somehow God opened the door, we went. That was late last year. And we begin to reach out, and these people, their hearts are very open. And we look at their condition, their living condition, everything. It's no good. And they don't know God. No one come and share gospel with them. So we thank God for a group of our brothers and sisters who went there week after week and care for them, buy food for them, befriend them, invite them to church. And one of these brothers, Wan An Xiang, accepted Christ. He accepted Christ, but he also contracted this cancer. There was a big growth around the neck. So it's already late stage. Doctor said there's not much hope. He's in hospital still. But I went to hospital to visit him. And he determined that he wanted to remove the idol from his house, even without his presence. But he agreed to do so. So we pray for him. And I can see, even this man, knowing that he may not live very long, God be willing, God may heal him. But he's at peace. He's very at peace, even at a sick bed. And we came back, and together with Pastor Lee Kai, or some of the brothers and sisters, we went there and removed. That was on the 15th. But not just that. We're looking for him to return. So on the 29th, we want to thank our DG, Ying Tan's DG. And together with some of the DG members, Ben, May, were there. And also Raymond and the whole family, and plus Raymond's mother, who's not even from Agape, also went and cleaned up the place. Why we clean up the place if this person is not coming back? It's a hope that he will discharge and he will come back. We go and prepare the place for him. So he's still in hospital. He's not discharged yet. We pray that he will return and he will have a clean place to stay. So some of you say, oh, we missed that. Yeah, we could have joined them. Don't worry. On the 29th or 28th of September, we have this Love Your Neighbor Cleaning Day. September is our anniversary month in our church. Instead of having a big party here, we want to go out and clean up a lot of Block 19's residence home to bless them with food. So the more news will come out, okay, about this program. So on the 28th, we're going to go there. That's a little. What do we have? We may not have much. We have time. We can go there and serve them. You do not know what God will do for the little thing that we're willing to put on the plate for him. The little stuff, the stuff that you have, the rod that you have on your hand, all the time, you think it doesn't work anything. It's so ordinary. Nobody even prays my staff. But God say, give it to me. And it will turn it into a miracle for his glory. Martin Luther King said, everybody can be great because everybody can serve. You want to be great? It's not about gaining more and accumulating more wealth and influence through what you possess, but through serving others. So what's that in your hand? What is your burden and your heartbeat? What do you see? Whether inside the church, outside the church, in your workplace, in your family, in the society at large, or the world at large. What do you see? What moves you? What moves you? What is the thing that moves you? Like for Scots, what moves him is that why should these people living in poverty and drinking dirty water and thousands of people will come and they don't have enough doctor to attend to them? So we're just doing some downstream thing which can never finish the job. Some upstream thing need to be done. So we need to change that. And he's the one. No one is with him. He's the only one. And he began to rally people because he loved the people. He said that no one should ever do that. For Gary Parker, Dr. Gary Parker, no one is rubbish. Just change your uniform. And it's huge for them. And these people begin to imagine. That's what it says, right? So what do you have? The little thing that you have. You may have time, you may have talent, you may have voice, you may have another things. You may have even money. You have connection. You have your influence in your social media group. You have your friends. You have your circles of friends and relatives. Right? Focus on what you have, not what you do not have. And then step out in faith and make the difference. And make your life count. As you, as I say, God has called all of us, whether young and old. Moses was called at the age of 80. Some of you were called younger. When I finish my theological college, I'm at the age of 50. Some of you, God may call you earlier. But remember, you are not alone. God has provided for Moses, Aaron, Miriam, Joshua. We work as a team to fulfill the will of God. Never alone. When Moses tried to act alone, it was a failure. And he was being put aside for 40 years till he come to his senses. And God can use him again. So turn your burden, turn your heartbeat into blessing. I want to thank God for our tutors who've been tutoring the Block 19, the Boon Keng area kids, you know, like Mary, and now recently Jing Yang, then who else? Jenna, and recently Xiao Hui Ai. She was used to be an ex-teacher in school. She was having this heart, thinking every time hearing about this, she thought that she can, but no, my time, all these things, a lot of concern. I cannot, this cannot. I have a lot of constraint I cannot serve. But there's someone Sunday after listening to the sermon, I don't know which sermon he listened to or who was preaching, doesn't matter. But God spoke to him, and after that, she came forward to Jia He Zhang Lao and said, I want to volunteer. Not every Saturday she came. And just give one-to-one tuition to one kid. Eric, Uncle Eric, Jomin's father, went to one of the students' home because I can't remember the name of the girl. They came with a wheelchair. You saw before, right? So you cannot walk properly. So it's very hard for her to come to tuition center in Agape. So Eric went to her home to give her one-on-one tuition. These are the little things. You may have time. You may want to spend in front of your monitor and play games. You have time. You want to spend with your friend playing other things. It's all your choice. You have it. It's not that God is asking something that you do not have. We have it. Were you willing to give it to God so that God can use it for the blessing of others? When we talk about 2x5y, we're not talking about the multiplication of filling up all these chairs alone. It's not just about a number game. It's about life transformation. Some of the members ask me, say, pastors, you know, you go to Block 19, these are the old people. We need young people in the church. If we serve all the old people, then end up we have more 3-4 weeks than more other things. Do we measure that way? Do we measure that way? We don't measure it that way. God calls us to be faithful in following God. You think God cannot, through other place, add youth into our church? If we serve only the old, the youth will not come in. You'll be surprised. I'm waiting for the surprise. I'm looking forward for it. All that God requires of us is to be faithful to His calling. If God asks us to serve the old, we serve the old. The disadvantaged, it's the young. It doesn't matter. If God asks us to go to Japan, we go to Japan. You go to Ubon, we go to Ubon. What does Ubon relate to all this? I don't know. We don't have all the answer, as I said. But it's a faith journey. Does Moses at the time of calling know that he's going to perform the 10 plagues on Egypt? He doesn't know a clue of it. Does he know he's the one who's going to part the Red Sea? He have no clue about it. Only at the point in time, God revealed to him. That is the journey of faith. 2XYY is a signpost, as I say. It's never a goal. But as you march towards it, you experience God. Just like Moses. When Moses experienced God, how does it turn Moses into? The Bible described Moses as the meekest man that walked the face of the earth. How can he become so meek or so humble? No one can be meek and humble naturally. You can only become meek and humble when you see the greatness of God. You see all the miracles, you see the life transformation, you see all the things that's impossible but become possible, and you know that it is God and God alone that do it. God and God alone that build the church. God and God alone that bring the 2x5y into fruition. But God is calling all of us. What do you have? All of us have something. You know what's the one thing that we have? We have the gospel of Jesus Christ. And at least there's one thing that we can give and share with others. Were you willing to do it? August coming, we have the Alpha course, both Chinese and English. Will you open up your jing kou and just invite? Do not be fearful. Do not be fearful. It's not that hard. Trust God. Make the first step, and we can see that God is working to us. What is in your hand? So I want to give three invitations to all of us today. The first invitation is that it's the first time you are here, you're non-Christian. You say that I want to believe in Jesus and accept Him as Savior. You can pray the prayer later together. So if any one of you who heard, say that yes, I want, you can say that prayer. The second one, if you've been Christian for a while, I know you were living a very nominal life, a mediocre life. And to you, that is normal. We work so that we can play. We work not because we want to glorify God. We work so that we have enough money, enough time, enough leave, enough so that we can go and play. We can travel the world. We got to play. But our work is to glorify God. So in everything they do, you say, God, I have been kind of doing the very minimal. China say, tangping. I'm a tangping Christian. You cannot fault me. Right? The leader cannot fault you that you're not serving. The leader cannot fault you that you're not participating. The leader cannot fault you that you're not coming to church. You're coming to church, you're sitting on the pew, you're doing something. But you know deep in you that is not what exactly God wanted for you. You're just living a subnormal Christian life according to God's calling in your life. I don't know what is it, but you know. Do not let the mediocrity limit what can God do through you. What's in your hand? And you give it to God. Say, God, this is all the thing that I'm holding on very firmly. I want to let go and let you. And I want to rise. I will rise and serve you. So you have to take up yourself. You have to stand up and say, God, I want to serve you. And the third thing are for the people who have been busy serving, who have been faithfully serving. And I pray that you can pray to God, like God, you expand your circle of influence. Extend your territory and make you a blessing to even many, many more lives. Beyond agape, beyond your cell group. You're leading one cell group today. Pray to God that God, not just one cell group, this cell group can multiply into three cell groups. You're only inviting one person. Try to invite three persons this round. You're only talking to your friend. Very close to you. Stop talking to a friend that's not so close to you. Extend it. Can you? What's that in your hand? Give it to God. Every one of us thought that we will live very old. Look at Becky, 9 years old, and he passed on in an accident. But his influence never died. He raised 1.2 million for charity. By herself, she only raised $220. $80 short of her own goal. But 1.2 million beyond her dream. That's what we can do. Agape can be a small thing, but we can do much bigger thing than that. It's how big your faith, how great your faith. And you can. And I really believe that we can. I'm really looking forward, and I believe all of us, now some of us at least, are looking forward for the day that truly, like what we sang just now, I want to see the glory of God. There's greater thing that God can do to us. What's in your head? Would you spend some time just responding to God and in prayer? And after that, we will pray together. Can you just commune with God? Say to God, you have not believed in Jesus Christ and you want to. You say, God, I believe in you. I want to accept you. And you've been holding back, you know that you're not living as what God intended you to live. Say, God, this is in my hand. I want to give it to you, what's in my hand.